Welcome to the program Old Testament Prophets with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Peace of God be with you all. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest, and I teach Old Testament at Loyola University in Chicago. We've been going through a series on the prophets of Israel, the prophets of the Old Testament. And today we begin the prophet Micah. Now, the word Micah in Hebrew means who is like. That's all that it means, who is like. And it might well have been a short form of a name like Mikael, whom we call Michael. And that means who is like God. Or like the other prophet we'd seen back in the first book of Kings, chapter 22, Micaiah, which means who is like Yahweh. But in the form that we have his name, it just means who is like, and probably like God. Now, we don't know a whole lot about Micah. As a matter of fact, I hope you've begun to notice that there's a big change in the prophets. We know very little about their lives and a lot more about what they said. Whereas with Elijah and Elisha and Samuel, we knew a lot more about their lives and very little about what they said. So it's just been reversed. And with Micah, we only know a few things. Now, open up your Bibles to the book of Micah. And you'll find that in the section that we call the Minor Prophets. Now, all the Minor Prophets are after the book of Daniel. And this prophet, Micah, is after the book of Jonah. All right, so just sort of thumb through and find Micah. And when you get there, you'll notice in chapter 1, verse 1, we have what is called the superscription. Now, the superscription does not mean it's the most powerful scription. It just means that it's written above the rest of the book, okay? And in the superscription, we find that there's a little bit of information about this man, Micah. Now, it says that this was the word of Yahweh that came to Micah of Moresheth. Now, Moresheth was a small town in southwestern Judah, not too far away from the Philistine border. So he's close to where the Philistines live. And therefore, in kind of a risky territory. Territory that could be endangered any time. And we also see that he's a prophet in the times of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, the kings of Judah. Now, Jotham was the king of Judah right after Uzziah. And that means that he was king around 742. And he reigned until 735. And just like in the reign of Uzziah, there was great prosperity in the time of Jotham. In Ahaz, there was a time of trouble and difficulty, and things began to crumble. And Hezekiah was a faithful king. Now, we also know that in this period, the Philistines were definitely on the rise, because in the year 745 B.C., so just 3 years before the King Jotham, there was a great king in Assyria. His name was Tiglath-Pileser III. Now, in the Bible, he's called Pul, after the second part of his name, Pileser. And this Tiglath-Pileser III was a very aggressive king. He was a usurper. He had taken over Assyria by revolution and took the throne. And he had a very aggressive policy towards the West. He did not simply want the other peoples to give him money. He wanted the other peoples and he wanted their land. He was definitely into conquest. And he began to turn his direction towards the west and towards Israel. He wanted Israel. And this man was king until 727 and caused lots of trouble in this period. Now, as I said, this period under Jotham in particular was a time of great wealth in Judah. There was great prosperity. People could say, well, hey, we trust God and we get all this good stuff, right? There's lots of grain, wine, oil, all the things of life. But Micah is going to be very critical because the people of Judah were committing serious sins of social injustice. They were oppressing the poor so that the rich could get richer. And that goes against God's will. Let's take a look and see what he says here. Let's start off with chapter 1, verse 2. And we're going to notice, by the way, throughout the whole book of Micah, that Micah will have a number of oracles, a number of sayings of doom and judgment. And then he'll give a saying of hope. And that pattern will happen three times throughout the book. So let's take a look at the first section on doom. Hear, Shim'u Amim Kulam. Hear, all you peoples, all of you. Hearken, O earth. And the word hearken, hakshivu, means pay attention. It's a stronger word even than listen. Listen, O earth, and all that is in it. So now here, we see again something we've seen many times before, the covenant lawsuit. And the people are being challenged. The people of Israel are going to be put on court by Yahweh. And now, all the peoples are told to listen, and the earth itself is told to pay attention as witnesses in this trial against Israel. And then not only are they witnesses, but it also says, and let the Lord Yahweh be a witness against you. Yahweh from his holy temple. Now notice how he talks about the holy temple, because Micah is down in Judah, where Jerusalem is, where the temple of Yahweh is, where the Ark of the Covenant was. For behold, Yahweh comes forth out of his place. He will come down and he will tread upon the high places of the earth. Yahweh is coming down from his place in heaven and he's mad. He's going to be stomping and treading down on the mountains. He is furious. He's in a bad mood. No time to cross Yahweh. When Yahweh is mad and he goes tramping around, let's see what happens here in verse 4. The mountains shall be molten underneath him, and the valleys shall be cut in two, like wax before the fire. When Yahweh shows up, there's fireworks. Okay, so it's like saying, you wait till your God comes home. Well, when God shows up, trouble. The mountains melt like wax, like waters that are poured down a steep place. And why is this? Because the transgression of Jacob is all of this, and for all the sins of the house of Israel. Now, Micah is speaking not just against Judah. He's speaking against the whole nation, against all of Israel and all of Jacob, all the people. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? And what he's saying is that the whole of the country, the very existence of the capital cities, Samaria and Jerusalem, are the cause of sin. We're going through the prophet Micah. Micah of Moresheth, a prophet of Judah. Now, he goes on to say that the whole of Samaria, the existence of Jerusalem, is in itself a sin. That the people are so bad in these cities that the very place itself is sin city, as we might say. And we might even think in our own culture how we even dedicate some of our cities to fun places, places of pleasure. Places like Las Vegas and Reno and Atlantic City. Places where people come to waste their money, to waste their morals. So what does he say here about Samaria in chapter 1, verse 6? Therefore, I will make Samaria a heap in the field, a place for the planting of vineyards, and I will pour down the stones of it into the valley. and I will uncover its foundations. Now, I'm here to tell you that this prophecy has come true 100%. I've been to see Samaria, and it's exactly as he describes it. The city is a heap of rocks in the field on a mountaintop, and it's a nice mountaintop, and there's vineyards that grow there, and there's no more city. It's gone, destroyed. The words of the prophet came true exactly for Samaria. And he goes on to say, all of her idols, all her graven images shall be beaten to pieces, and all of her hired money shall be burned with fire. Now, what do they mean by hired money or hires? That the people had gone after other gods like a prostitute. He's kind of using the same imagery that the prophet Hosea had used. And all the money that she got, all the stuff that she claimed, that Samaria claimed she got from the other gods, actually will be burned up and destroyed. All of her idols I will lay desolate. Remember what happened? We talked about this a long time ago. When the Ark of the Covenant was taken by the Philistines and put in the Philistine temple. And because of the presence of the Ark of the Covenant, the statue of the god Dagon fell down. Twice it fell down and broke. Well, Yahweh says, I will destroy all of the idols of the place of Samaria. The city of Samaria will have its idols destroyed. And they shall become the harlots, and they shall have the hire of a harlot. So they'll be just like, if they've acted religiously like harlots, like prostitutes, then they will receive simply the kind of money that a prostitute makes. Now, one of the things that we'll see happen with this prophet is that, like Amos and Hosea, he does not rejoice and say, ha, 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 you deserve it. He doesn't do that. Let's see Micah's personal reaction. In verse 8, he says, because of all this, because of this great destruction against Samaria, the city of the north, I will wail and howl. I will go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like the jackals and a mourning like the ostriches. Now picture this prophet. Because of this destruction that God brings down upon the people, he goes out like a jackal and he's going to howl at the moon. And he's going to take off his clothes and sit outside in his underwear. Sit outside naked. Not because he's some sort of exhibitionist, but because he identifies with the shame of desolate Samaria, with the people's own suffering and pain. Because, he says in verse 9, because her wound is incurable. I mean, the people have sinned so much that it's like a wound. And that they've sinned so deeply that the wound of their sin cannot be cured. There's no way out of it. And it has even come down to Judah, and it reaches to the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem. The infection of this sin goes beyond Samaria, and even affects Jerusalem, which has the holy temple. And we should look at our own lives. First of all, does the sin of other people, the sin of worldly types around us, does that affect us? Do we allow it to reach our gates? Do we allow it to come close to us? Do we identify with the different kinds of sins that go on in our culture? The lewdness, the theft, the disregard for the hungry, the lack of care for the poor. Do we identify and let it come up to our gates and do it ourselves? And if so, we must repent. Secondly, we also have to see, do we rejoice in the sins of other people and especially rejoice in the punishment they deserve? Or rather, do we do like this prophet Micah and mourn and wail because we identify with the pain of sinners? We even identify with those who have to suffer after death. We don't want them to suffer after death. Just like the prophet did not want the people of Samaria to be destroyed. Then it says, now don't you tell it in Gath. Now what's Gath? Gath is a Philistine city. very close to Moresheth. It was the Philistine city closest to Moresheth. And he says, don't tell it over there in Gath. Weep not at all. At Beth Le'afra, roll yourself in the dust. In other words, he tells the people of Gath, don't you rejoice in this either. Just because Samaria is your enemy, you shouldn't rejoice in their destruction. Because eventually, as we'll see with other, the prophet Isaiah, that the city of Gath is going to get the same treatment. Pass ye away, O inhabitant of Shephir. Pass away in nakedness and shame. The inhabitant of Sa'anan has not come forth, and the wailing of Beth-Azel shall be take you from the standing place of it. Now, this is a place, the places here are Philistine towns, Shephir, which means the beautiful town, or beauty town. We might call it tinsel town, like we say about Hollywood. And, you know, you're going to suffer too. And all these other towns are also Philistine towns. Now, he is there saying that the people who are around cannot themselves rejoice in all this. That they themselves are going to suffer punishment because they are no better. And they have to remember that. He even goes on to say here in verse 13 that this place, inhabitant of Lachish, was the beginning of sin for the daughter of Zion. That Lachish was a big city south of Jerusalem. And they start the sins too. And they bring sin to Zion. And the sins of Israel are found in you. Therefore, don't you dare rejoice in them and the destruction of Samaria, because you do the same things. We're going through the prophet Micah. We've seen how he himself mourns and wails and howls because of the destruction to come to Samaria. And he even tells the people of Philistia and the people of Judah to mourn as well, because they have committed the same sins. As a matter of fact, in chapter 1, verse 16, he even says, shave your head, make yourself bald for the children of your delight. Make your baldness like that of the vulture. For you, for your children have gone into captivity from before you. Now, what does he mean here? He's telling the people of Jerusalem, shave your own heads as a sign of mourning and death, because you're going to experience death yourself. Now, he brings out an important truth here, I believe. That a lot of times, we may point to how bad somebody else is and what kind of sin they have. Meanwhile, you and I are doing the same thing we criticize somebody else for. As a matter of fact, how many times do we find with spouses that they criticize their spouse for the very thing that they do themselves? The thing we hate most in other people is the sin that we ourselves do. And Micah is telling the people of Judah and Jerusalem, don't you be criticizing other people. Because when you have one finger pointing at them, there's three more pointing right back at yourself. And he tells them to take that seriously, so much so that they should act as if they're going to their own funeral. Now, what's the big deal here? Now, why is Micah so upset? Why does the Lord give him this word of such destruction and punishment? Let's take a look at chapter 2. He says, hoy, woe. In English we say woe. Okay, but he's not talking to a horse here. He's saying like a Jew. Hoy, hoy, choshevei aven. Those who think up, who devise, who plan out iniquity. Bentness. The word aven means bentness. And they work evil upon their beds while they're still laying in bed in the morning. Before they get up, they plan the evil they're going to do. When the morning is light, they do it. They execute it. They bring it about. Because it is in the power of their hand. In other words, people think of what they're going to do the next day while they're still in bed. And then when they get up, they have so much power in society, they actually accomplish the evil they plan. They covet fields, so they... on their beds, they think about it, they covet things. And they want to get them. Now, we have to think ourselves, how we have a whole advertising industry dedicated to having us covet all kinds of big cars, big houses, and fancy appliances. They teach us to covet. And in one sense, we're no better than they are. They covet fields, and then they seize them. They covet houses, and they take them away. Thus they oppress a man in his house, even a man in his heritage. Now, again, remember what we've talked about before, that in Israel, Yahweh had owned the land of Canaan. That was his territory. And he, through Joshua, parceled out the land, gave each family and each clan and each tribe their own portion of land as an everlasting inheritance. And now the rich are buying up the land, kicking out the poor, making them poorer, while they become richer and richer. Therefore, thus says Yahweh, behold, against this family I am devising an evil. So now Yahweh is devising some evil plan for them, a plan of destruction. And the word evil, ra, also means destruction. A plan from which you shall not remove your necks. It's like he's putting them under a guillotine, and they're not going to be able to move their necks out of it. Neither shall you be able to walk upright, because it shall be a time of evil, or time of destruction. On that day that they take up a parable against you, and a lament with a doleful, sorrowful lamentation, and say, we are utterly ruined. He changes the portions of my people, and how he removes it from me. And what's he talking about here? He says, on that day of judgment, always when we see that day refers to the final day of judgment, they will take up a parable, but not just a parable, but a riddle. Or they will take up a taunting song, or they will mock you, a joke. They'll make you into a joke, might be a good way to translate that. And they will lament with a sorrowful lamentation and say, we are utterly ruined, because he, that is God, changes the portion of my people. And so the rich people are going to lose what they took away from the poor, because they did it unjustly. They did not allow the poor to earn a good, solid living. They did not let every individual have their own land, their own territory, from which they can build up a life for their family. And because the rich did that, it shall be taken away from the rich, and they shall be no more rich. Just like all the riches stolen by the Nazis from Europe was eventually taken from the Nazis, and the Nazis were themselves destroyed in Europe. Therefore, you shall have none that shall cast the line by lot in the congregation of Yahweh. What do you mean there? You will have nobody in the group of, in the people of Israel that shall cast the line by lot. That is, set markers by lines for the land. You rich people are not even going to be around. Now, what do the rich people say to him? They say, hey, Micah, this is in verse 6, stop preaching. They preach. The rich preach to Micah, you stop preaching to us. You shut up. You shall not preach of these things, but so that we're not ashamed. Don't say bad things about us. It makes us feel bad. That's what the rich people are saying. So Yahweh asks in verse 7, do I change, O house of Jacob? Is the spirit of Yahweh, you know, put into a narrow little channel? Can you tell Yahweh what to do? Are these his doings? Do not my words do good to him that walks uprightly? In other words, even when I give a word of correction to you, doesn't that do you good if you are upright? But of late, my people has risen up as an enemy, and with the garment that you strip also the mantle from them that pass by securely, so that they are as men returning from war. In other words, you're so perverse that you take not only the outside mantle, but even the shirt of somebody when they pass by. You take everything from the poor. You're never satisfied. And therefore, the Lord Yahweh is going to punish and destroy you. Because you punished and destroyed the poor, the Lord shall punish you. Now, you and I have to examine our own selves. How do you and I help the poor? How do we minister to them? Are we just to them? And do we give out of our riches to them? And if so, then we can know that we are upright before God and do His will. God bless you.